each of the previous years that we've had this Festival of the Holy Name on the 4th of July weekend, we've spoken about a Krishna conscious perspective on Independence Day. So this is the first time I've spoken on this topic. Declaring our dependence on the Holy Name. Thank you. Some 225 years ago in America, there was a Declaration of Independence. And Prabhupada was interviewed about the Declaration of Independence and what he had to say about it. So he asked, well, what is it? What did they say? And Prabhupada was told, well, the founding fathers said that all men are created equal. And Prabhupada said, well, from the perspective of the soul, all men are created equal. That's correct. But not that all bodies are equal. Some are big, some are small, some are this and some are that. But from the spiritual perspective, equal. And then they are endowed with their Creator with certain inalienable rights, such as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That pushed Prabhupada's button about pursuit of happiness. Pursuit of ignorance. Their understanding of what is happiness is avidya, so they're free to pursue avidya and suffer. And that they call happiness. Or in Canada, I've come to know a little bit more about Canada since I've had service in relation to the Canadian devotees. They have their Independence Day also. I happen to know that because a zillion buses come to New Vrindavan on that weekend. Just like, you know, here in America, the Independence Day, a lot of people go here and there for vacation. A lot of Canadian people go to New Vrindavan on that holiday, Canadian Independence Day. Or Swaraj. A few of you are here from India, I see, so. What does Swaraj mean? Swaraj, self-rule, independence. So, is there such a thing as self-rule? Or are we can declare anything we like, but are we really independent? Our whole material existence is declaring our independence from Krishna. Are we independent from Krishna? Well, that's a topic that Prabhupada liked to speak about. And there are many ways where he would poke holes in the theory that we can be independent. We can even make the statement that we're independent. I'm independent. For example, one of them is Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi. We may be able to address all other concerns, which isn't going to happen, but working hypothesis, supposing we can address all other concerns, no problems, as they say. No problem, Prabhu. Except Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi. And there are unwanted circumstances in life which are forced upon us, and there's nothing that we can do. And Prabhupada would elaborate. Who likes disease? Oh, could I have some of this disease and maybe a few of those? We don't go looking for disease, but we get disease. And then Prabhupada would speak about himself. I'm an old man, and I cannot move around as I used to move around. I don't like getting old, but the body gets old. And then comes death. And it's unwanted, but it's circumstances that are forced upon us, and again taking birth, and he would describe. It's not that we, okay, since I have to get born again, I'd like to take birth in this mother and that father in this place. No, it's forced upon us. According to our guna and karma, we take birth in a particular situation, and it's not an independent choice. Or to take birth or not take birth, it's not an independent choice. There are unwanted circumstances that are forced upon us. We are not independent, although we can declare, I'm independent. Another classic, I heard this just yesterday, probably for the 100th time, of Prabhupada speaking. In the course of one's life, many someones, they want to accumulate wealth. So whatever it is that they've accumulated, at the time of death, is taken away. So how is that independence? If it's yours because you're independent, you can take it with you, but you can't take it with you. It's left behind. You're forced. Gently or rudely, it's taken away. Gradually or all at once, it's taken away. And there's not an exception. Is there any man that can claim to be immortal? They may say, I will make immortality happen through science. But there is no such thing. Could be because we're not independent, although we may want to live forever. We're not able. And aside from janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, even just ordinary circumstances of life, like being able to walk across the floor. I can walk across the floor if I want. But if Krishna takes away the ability, then we can't even do that. As Prabhupada would say, we can't even blink our eyelid, which is an involuntary act. You can't even do that without Krishna's sanction. So declaring independence is a foolish notion. But in this world, people like their independence. And America is particularly noted for the spirit of independence. And, you know, the independent personalities that float around this country. Very independent spirited. But it's a false independence. The truth is we're dependent beings. And it's not that we're partially, we are absolutely dependent. We're absolutely dependent. Now, to make such a statement from the material perspective is bad. It's bad to be dependent. At least that's our Western spirit. Don't be dependent. Be independent. Act independently. Now, Prabhupada also valued the brahminical quality of being independently thoughtful. You've heard that phrase before? Brahmanas should be independently thoughtful. But that doesn't mean independent-minded. Independently thoughtful means you stand on your own two legs. You recognize, you're not, it's not groupthink, in other words. You receive from qualified sources. You consider that which you've received from qualified sources very carefully. You contemplate, in Prabhupada's language, from all angles of vision, carefully consider a subject, and reach a conclusion on the authority of Shabda. And a Brahmana is one who's capable of doing that. So they don't have to think as the crowd thinks. They're not sudras. Brahmanas are to be independently thoughtful on the authority of the scripture and under the guidance of spiritual master, but reach their own conclusions, not the groupthink conclusions. So that's valued. But it's still not independence. It's proper exercise of our minute free will. What is it that we can say in terms of independence is ours? One thing that we can say is our free will is ours. We can also say Krishna gave us our free will, but it's the kind of thing that Krishna doesn't take away, and so it's independent. We can exercise our free will to a minute degree independently. To a minute degree is important. It's something like a visual image that I carry is a cow that's on a rope. And some cows I've seen in India, the owner of the cows or the protector of the cows give them a very long rope. They can cover a big area. Some cows are a little more rambunctious, so they give them a shorter rope. So our free will is a longer rope or a shorter rope. And the more one is in the mode of goodness, the longer the rope. The more one is in the mode of passion, shorter rope. The more one is in the mode of ignorance, an even shorter rope. In fact, you can hardly even see the rope. The capacity to exercise free will is greatly diminished, although free will is fundamentally there. But even the mode of goodness, long rope, it's still not independence. It's a dependent free will. There's a limit to it. We can make choices with free will, but, for example, we can't will to be independent because we're dependent. Somebody needs to be with the children because they... Another thing that we can say that is the property of the living entity. Well, put it as a question. What can we say is ours? Is there anything that exists that we can say is ours? We can't say our body is ours, because it can be taken away. We can't say our mind is ours because it's not under our control. It's some other forces controlling the mind. Or our possessions, certainly that's not ours. So take away the things that are not ours, and what can we say is ours? Even as far as the soul itself, that's the property of Krishna. It's Krishna's. We can't even say, I belong to me. I belong to Krishna. So what can we say is ours? And our acharyas give the answer. The one thing that we can say is ours is our relationship with Krishna. That's ours. Can't be taken from us, just like the free will cannot be taken from us. I mean, it's constitutionally given, our relationship with Krishna. So one of the statements or declarations of full surrender unto Krishna, there's six symptoms of surrender, and one of them is Atma Nivedana. Atma Nivedana, full self-surrender, where one declares, nothing is mine. But then that's incomplete. Krishna, you are mine. Not like, you know, the kind of property you put in your pocket and walk down the street and say, I've got Krishna here. He's mine, and you can't have him because he's mine. But in a relationship, Krishna, I am yours, and you are mine. This is what our acharyas teach. That's the platform of full self-surrender. I have nothing except my relationship with Krishna, and I am Krishna's property. That's submission unto Krishna, and it's reality. That's declaring our dependence upon Krishna. And in this age, the form of Krishna that's most accessible to everyone, regardless of their how long the rope is, what mode of nature they're in, or what their condition of life is, that form of Krishna that is most accessible to all living beings is the holy name. So as we're dependent upon Krishna for our deliverance, we're particularly dependent upon the holy name, that form of Krishna. And because the holy name not only delivers us, but the holy name delivers everything of the spiritual world. It delivers unto us Krishna's form, Krishna's qualities, and Krishna's pastimes. In the very, very elevated stages of our Goswamis, for example, simply through the chanting of the holy name, the pastimes of the personality of Godhead are enacted within their heart, which is very amazing. It's not just Paramatma with his four arms who's radiating sat and chit, cognizance and eternality, but through the chant, someone was asking today about chanting Krishna's name, comparing experientially chanting Krishna's name with chanting Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And in one sense, it's like the difference between the Paramatma feature and the Bhagavan feature. The chanting of Krishna's holy name as the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is declaring our dependence upon Krishna. And our dependence upon Krishna is me, or it means serving Him. Because when you're dependent on someone, it follows naturally that you serve them. Even in ordinary life, Prabhupada would give this example. If someone is very kind munificent, and very charitable, constantly offering acts of kindness and charity unto you. What does it invoke? You want to reciprocate and serve them. Then Prabhupada would elevate that to the religious principle that the child should serve the parent, because the parent is in that position. The child should respect mother and father and should serve. Elevated further, Krishna, the Supreme Father, was maintaining all fathers and mothers. And recognizing Krishna's position, one should want to serve him. One's recognizing who he is, what Krishna is, or who Krishna is, what Krishna's position is. And especially the holy name, because the holy name can, on the one hand, deliver us from material existence altogether. Somebody was asking during one of the breaks, one of the newer people that was coming from that section of Chicago, I'm just beginning chanting, and I've heard that chanting can relieve one of all sinful reactions. Is it true? Answer, it's true. The statement is made that if one can chant sincerely Krishna's holy name even once, that one sincere chanting is so powerful that all sinful reactions, even more than you can possibly commit, are relieved. No, don't try it out. Because then you become guilty of one of the offenses against the chanting of the holy name, to sin on the strength of chanting. But the fact is, the potency is there. The small condition is sincerely. That's a nice word. Let's speak a little bit about what sincerity is. What is sincerity? Sahotra Swami gave a very nice lecture on this word. And the etymology, or the root word of the English term sincerity, comes from a Latin word, which I forget right now, scire or something like that, which is a way of describing marble that doesn't have any lines in it. You know, like deities are that kind of marble. All white or all black or whatever the marble is. Whereas like the marble out in the hallway, it has lines in it. So that's a certain quality of marble, but that other quality of marble has no lines in it. There's nothing but this one thing. And so that's where sincerity comes. There's only one thing. There's only, and it's, there's no mixture of any other thing. Sincerely taking shelter of the holy name means there's no other thing going on. Having once called Krishna's name sincerely, the potency is within Krishna's holy name to completely smash to pieces all the material conceptions, all material attachments, all reactions to any past misdeeds one could possibly have performed in countless numbers of lifetimes. Therefore, declare dependence upon the holy name. We have this term in Sanskrit that we're going to be using Sunday morning, sankalpa. What's the meaning? Anybody know generic meaning of sankalpa? Intention. In Karmakanda Yajnas, sankalpa comes at the very beginning, or towards the very beginning. There's some deity that is worshipped, some sacrifice unto a particular deity, and the priest utters the sankalpa, which is the intention of this particular yajna is something. It may be prosperity, or it may be health or wealth or something or something. Just like in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, it describes if one wants this particular material thing, worship this deity, wants that particular thing, worship that deity. There's a sankalpa connected with karmakanda rituals. There's also a sankalpa or intention connected with the chanting of Krishna's holy name. And those that understand what the holy name can deliver, then the sankalpa becomes, for example, we were discussing this morning, to reawaken our dormant relationship with Krishna, or in simple language, Krishna, please accept me. It's a sankalpa. It's an intention. It's an appeal to Krishna. For my purpose in chanting your holy name is for my heart to open, and recognizing that my heart is again open towards you, kindly accept me. Kindly accept my loving gesture unto you. Kindly accept me. So that's a declaration. Or in Christianity, there's another term. It's called affirmation. So can't call upon it. So many of you that have had that upbringing, but it's a part of a Christian theology. A certain part of Christianity. Affirmation. And it's kind of a New Age term also. The affirmation is like the power of positive thinking. I affirm, da-da-da. Without necessarily depending upon God. But when there's dependence upon God, what's the purpose of your extending some dependence upon God? Well, in many cases, it's some form of prosperity or relief from a distressful condition of life. That's the intention, or sankalpa. The suggestion that I'm offering with this evening's topic, declaring our dependence upon Krishna, that's a nice sankalpa. That it's like Lord Brahma. And when Lord Brahma spoke this wonderful verse, after stealing the calves and the cowherd boys and recognizing he made a big offense to Krishna, and recognizing he was getting a big reaction for that big offense to Krishna, we spoke about that this morning, that about determination, his prayer to Krishna was, let the reaction, my intention is not to counteract the reaction I'm due to receive. I've not come to you to say, please grant me pardon. Please don't punish me for my wrongdoing. I've made a wrongdoing. I accept the responsibility for my wrongdoing. Let it come. But my sankalpa is, let my mind not budge one inch from your two lotus feet. Let me achieve the shelter of your lotus feet. That spiritual intention. Because life can be filled with every moment with all kinds of other counteracting the difficult circumstances due to our past misdeeds that are coming our way. And the ones that are yet to come and anticipating they're going to come. Padma Purana describes this. Past misdeeds have their current manifestation, prarabdha karma, it's called. So one of the sankalpas of ritual is to get rid of prarabdha karma, like, you know, problems that are happening immediately, let me atone for those wrongdoings. And my intention is to get free from those reactions. Or the ones that are soon to fructify, the ones that are just beginning to sprout, those that are still as seed, dormant, just waiting, lurking for the right moment to come and cause me problem. Rupa Goswami teaches this in Nectar Devotion, that all of those can be removed at once by the chanting of the holy name. So we don't need to call upon the holy name to uproot those things, for the holy name will do that already. If one understands the mercy of the holy name. Therefore, the declaring one's dependence upon the holy name is, let me become situated once again in my relationship of love on the spiritual plane with you, Krishna, eternally. That's the spiritual reality where we are fully dependent upon Krishna. So last comment, and then we'll see if there's some discussion. Last comment is, from our earlier talks this afternoon about, you know, this example of to accept something, you have to let go of something. It's just the nature of life. To advance spiritually, there has to be a degree of detachment. Say it the opposite. Without a degree of detachment, there's no advancement in spiritual life. There has to be a willingness to let go of something in order to receive another something. Even if you have big hands, you have to let go. So that let go is this false sense of independence, because the false sense of independence is what got us here in the first place. You have to let go of that false sense of independence in order to understand who we really are, and then assert the intention, I declare my dependence. It's just a fact, but I assert it. It's a declaration, sankalpa. It's my intention to restore that natural position. We don't like to let go of our independence, especially Americans. We value that independence very stubbornly. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Very strong spirit. Spiritual life doesn't say, don't have a life, don't have any liberty, and have no happiness. But it's the spiritual perspective on what life, real freedom, is declaring dependence. Prabhupada discusses this in relation to Narada Muni. He says that Narada Muni is fully independent because he's declared his full dependence upon Krishna. Narada Muni can travel anywhere in the material world, in the spiritual world. He doesn't need an airplane. He doesn't need a ticket. He doesn't need anybody's permission. He doesn't need a visa or passport or papers of any kind. No documents required. I'd like to travel with Narada Muni. And why does he have such freedom, liberty? He's full dependent upon the personality of Godhead. So he who grants licenses or liberty has given full liberty. And that's the way of elevated spiritual life. So we still observe the laws of the land, the laws of the state. Spiritual life, advanced within spiritual life, doesn't teach that one should neglect conventional law, law and order. But the spiritual principle is there's enormous freedom, freedom of thought, freedom of spirit, freedom of happiness, by declaring dependence. Absolute dependence. Prabhupada uses that word. Absolute dependence. That's reality. And that's the position of happiness. Although, by material standards, that's slavery. We abolished slavery long ago. It's bad. But even if one wants to be a slave, he can't be a slave. But spiritually, we can. And not a slave in a demeaning sense, but just the menial order carry of Krishna. Krishna just indicates something. And that's our happiness, to have Krishna indicate something. So then we can busy ourselves, occupy ourselves with that something. On this topic, I was just hearing Prabhupada say, one should not speak this way, but for purpose of giving an example, I'll speak this way. He said, people say to me, Swamiji, you have done wonders. You have done miracles. And I say, I have not done miracles. I have simply taken the order of my spiritual master. And I've given my life and soul to the order of my spiritual master. And as a result, miracles have come, but it's not I who have done it, it is He who has done it. It is Krishna's mercy because of accepting that one principle. This declaring absolute dependence on the order of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. And that's our absolute independence. That means, by that we mean, the rule of Krishna prevails. The power of Krishna that's far beyond our power prevails by declaring our dependence upon Krishna. And the best means for that is the chanting of the holy name. So the whole weekend, this festival of the holy name, is dedicated to that same mission. Trying to receive the mercy that Krishna wants us to receive through the medium of His holy name, applying ourselves in various ways, hearing, trying to understand, experimenting, practicing, demonstrating, entering into the realm of the mystery of Krishna's holy name, in that spirit of dependence upon the holy name for our all spiritual perfections. And so, I'll stop speaking. We have about 15 minutes before our next session. We didn't have any questions and answers this afternoon. If there's any questions from that, or this, or whatever you'd like, we have about 15, 20 minutes for that. Any comments or questions? Here comes the microphone.
You mentioned that Lord Krishna's way of permission, he cannot even, you know, do anything at all.
Yes.
And it is like, I can't even move. But then, how does feeling come into the picture then? Isn't whatever we are doing is sanctioned or permitted by Krishna?
Yes. Our free will is minute. That's the rope example. We have independence, but it's not absolute independence. It's minute independence. We have independence to a degree. To say we have minute We have dependence. Independence to a degree does not mean we have no independence. We have some, but it's minute. So the cow that's with the long rope can cover more territory, but she can't go all over the whole pasture ground. And the one with the shorter rope can still move around. So we have minute free will. It's still limited. You know, and for those souls that are beyond the modes of nature, like Narada Muni, what's the limit? It's as Krishna gives him, it's Krishna has given Narada such a range of his free will. He can act like Bhagavan. But he's not. He's empowered. So every living being has some gift from Krishna, some empowerment from Krishna. Prahlad can dance. And he can wander around and be mischievous. He has some gift from Krishna. Everyone has some gift from Krishna. To exercise that gift, like the blinking of our eyelid, still it requires Krishna's sanction. Some independence, but it's dependent. The execution of that. So another way of saying the same thing is, in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, it says there are five factors of action. And one of the factors of action is endeavor. That's what the living entity does. So we can endeavor. That's our free will being exercised. But if the other four factors are, any one of the four factors are not present, that endeavor is not going to produce. Endeavor all you like. If especially Krishna's sanction is not there, I can endeavor to blink my eye, but it may not blink. Or I can endeavor to open my eye, but it may not open. Although capacity may apparently be there, but if it's withdrawn, my free will isn't going to work. But I can still will. It's dependent. I may will to be liberated. It's not sufficient to will to be liberated. Sanction of the Supreme Lord must be there. I can will to be a millionaire. Without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, it's not going to happen. Yes? Sidwal? Where's the... Oh, you have it. Okay.
Thank you very much for inspiring series of lectures. In the last lecture, you have made one point that the strength or the quality of our strength is dependent on the strength of our connection with the spiritual master and also his representatives.
And also
his representatives from whom we are taking instructions.
That was this afternoon.
So it is very important to have a spiritually strong relationship with the spiritual master and his representatives. So how I can know that the relationship is spiritually strong and
ask him. And you know, you can, it's like Prabhupada being asked, Prabhupada, how do you become sincere? And Prabhupada's answer was, everybody knows what is sincerity. Everybody knows what is insincerity. So be sincere by being sincere. That was his answer. He didn't sometimes answer how-to questions, so, you know. a contemporary phrase that we use these days is connected, feeling connected. Now, that's one way of saying it is a strong relationship. However, there's this other entity that floats around called the mind, that sometimes the mind makes us feel not connected. And it's really just the mind, you know, being like a jack-in-the-box. I guess I'm not connected. The mind acts up. And if we especially give attention, invest, you know, that's my identity, that's me over there, that jack-in-the-box, mind, then, you know, we have a sense of being disconnected or not a strong relationship. So, let's say, not to embarrass you and your wife, but, you know, I'm sure there are times, as in any marriage, where you communicate well and you don't communicate as well. So, when you don't communicate as well, then the relationship is not as strong because you're not communicating well. And when you can, again, communicate well, the relationship becomes strong. So that's another measure of... There can be, let's say, from my experience with God brothers who I work closely with, it's a formula for, you know, not communicating well or dissension if the relationship is not strong. But if the relationship is strong, they can have a very different opinion than you have, and it's perfectly okay. It's not like good relationship in a friend to friend perspective is there's always agreement. We always see everything the same way. Certainly that's not in marriage. And it's not in relationships with friend and friend. With a spiritual authority, with a good relationship with a spiritual authority is, I feel that I have been heard and understood. And another, it's this one. I've been accepted. My ideas may be, you know, dissonant, and I may be struggling, and whatever the maybe is, I'm not being rejected. I'm being accepted. I'm being understood. And from this other person, now my heart is open to receive their message. And it's not on my terms. It's, you know, I want to hear their message. And I want to accept their message and internalize that message, like Arjuna does with Krishna. But, you know, Krishna, you said this and then you said that, so can you please explain? He's seeking clarity. It's not dull. It's an independently thoughtful exchange, so that I can clearly understand, because Arjuna is addressing Krishna as his shishya, his disciple. Please explain. That can, you know, so there's, when there's clarity, he's ready to... And from Krishna's side, he's giving Arjuna complete freedom to do as he feels he must do. It's not a control, a good relationship is not a control relationship. A good relationship, spiritual master to disciple, is a loving relationship. As with Arjuna to Krishna, I'm ready. Where's the battlefield? Let's go. Discipline through love is the good relationship. Turn it the other way around. Without discipline, there's no question of disciple. There's no question of spiritual master-disciple relationship. But discipline doesn't mean I'm big, you're small, you better do what I say. Because I'm big and you're small. Just Make sure you understand, I'm big, you're small, do what I say. Don't question what I say, just do what I say. Because I'm big and you're small. That's a power relationship, it's not a loving relationship. And a loving relationship is voluntary. With voluntary, I still may ask as many questions as needed so that I can understand. But then I'm disciplined by that instruction. Jaya Jagannath.
Hi,
Bob. Yes. Nice story, huh? How we can apply that is, in practical terms, if you have the opportunity to chant with Lokanath Goswami, stay in his mood. And if you have the opportunity to chant with, as you do every morning with Krishna Smarana, chant in his mood. And you know, he doesn't, you know what his mood is, so that's the person who you're presently receiving that kind of association. And understand his mood. Because that's service to the Vaishnav. To the, you know, the prominent Vaishnav who you're immediately, proximately serving. And you, so that's service. You recognize what their wish is. And in service to Radha and Krishna, you do that. That's a relationship. And but from the story, you can also appreciate, let it be in the mood of serving Radha and Krishna, not just, you know, distraction. Or something, let it become more devotional. You know, service to the Vaishnavas is devotional. Let it be devotional. Which means in the service of Radha and Krishna. Try to go more deeply into what we're doing when we're doing, you know, the consciousness aspect and the consciousness of service of the Vaishnavas that you're with. So like, you know, you spend some time in Chaupati and there's a certain mood. It's a nice mood. So, you know, when in Rome, when in Chaupati, you know, you serve the Vaishnavas as an expression of service to Radha and Krishna. And you choose those Vaishnavas with whom you associate wisely and carefully. I mean, you know, the intimate association, wisely and carefully. And those with whom you chant together, you know, like inviting Vadahari to this festival of the Holy Name. Wow. And when he said he couldn't come, it was, and I, you know, it was just very, very wonderful that somehow Keshavacharya didn't have some other booking this weekend, so he could come, and it's another wow. So we, you know, because like he asked me when we finished our morning class, and then took prasadam, so. I wanted him to chant, so he asked, okay, what would you like me to do? Elevate everybody to the stage of love of God, please. Through your chanting. with blessings of the Holy Name and yourself, we can try to do that service. So, the mood of the chanter, the mood of the servant of the holy name is important, selecting that association and serving even as we're doing. So we're going to end right now and have this Nama Yajna. But let us see if we can enter into it as the name is not different than Krishna, and together we're going to associate with Radha and Krishna and serve them by hearing their holy name in such a way that that holy name enters into our hearts. And there'll be a big molten puddle of melted hearts in the middle of the floor here by the end of the Nama Yajna. I'm confident. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So the way that we've done this, I'd like if we can try it again, Subal, in a circle. The musical instruments will go right in the middle of the floor here. And everyone come in close, and I'll come in and ask you, come closer. So we get very right around the kirtan, and that's the fire of the yajna. And we'll see if we can, how many hearts we can melt.